At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
The 80s saw Alice Cooper release arguably his most diverse collection of albums, ranging from new wave to metal to full-on radio-friendly rock. They may not have all been commercially successful, but they were absolutely a body of work recorded during an interesting period of Alice's life. We spoke with Chris Sutton about Alice Cooper in the 70s and had such a great time. We thought he'd get him back because, believe it or not, he's written about Alice Cooper in the 80s. Delighted to be joining me live on the line once again on this show, Chris Sutton. Chris, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
Pleasure's all mine. It's a remarkable career. I mean, the 70s was interesting enough, but we talk about great comebacks and, you know, rock stars of the 70s who shouldn't really be with us at this point in time. Alice Cooper's got to come pretty damn close to the top of that list.
Yeah, absolutely. The idea for the 80s was always there when I started doing the 70s because it is such a fascinating decade. But luckily, there was a popular request from a lot of people who bought the book and got hold of Sonic Bond and said, you know, is the 80s going to come as well? Which was handy because I was already working on it. So, but yeah, he goes from arguably the very bottom, the pits, if you like, to the top in one decade. And as you quite rightly said, the material ranges in styles considerably, probably more so than any other decade he's ever had in his career, arguably, I would say. He starts off with Flush the Fashion, which is the new wavy album in 1980, recorded with Roy Thomas Baker, who had worked with Queen, as you probably know. And the bulk of Elton John's band kind of play on that one and on the ensuing tour. And that's a great album, Flush the Fashion. It's very diverse. You see Alice trying to say this is what Alice would be like in 1980. He does make a considerable effort to sort of not be like Alice was in the 70s, yeah, to update, would be like, the character and the songs.
Because that's going to be interesting, because he's had this massive hit, hasn't he, in the early 70s with School's Out, and he's done the whole thing. And it's, you know, I mean, you could, I mean, loads of people have that one hit and then sink without trace. But it is a case of him trying to reinvent himself and prove he's down with the kids, because there's this whole new, obviously, music scene coming out. I'm thinking, obviously, in the end of the 70s, we've got bands like Aerosmith, Van Halen starting to come out of the States. And is he still trying to be relevant?
Yeah, well, what I find interesting with Flush the Fashion, particularly that album in 80, was it, other bands were trying to adapt to this thing of 1980. And you saw this a lot with people like Rush, ZZ Top. All these sort of bands went from 79 to 80 or thereabouts and changed their looks or the hairstyles and the sound. But Alice's change on Flush the Fashion is really quite dramatic. It doesn't really bear a lot of resemblance to the stuff that he's done in the years before that in the 70s. It may not be as great a body of work, arguably, but it's certainly interesting and has its high points, definitely.
Interesting is obviously an interest. Again, it's a word we could take in many sort of ways. What is this fan base? I mean, what how does Alice find himself in the late 70s, and what's his fan base? Because it's we're venturing into Spinal Tap Jazz Odyssey here, aren't we? If you suddenly reinvent yourself and get away from your key audience, you run the risk of being abandoned by them.
Well, since he broke up with the original Alice Cooper group in sort of mid-74, what you'd seen was, you know, fan bases tend to come in waves, don't you? You obviously know this. So I came in 72 with School's Out and so on, and obviously gets a huge big fan base influx, as we're going to hear a little further on, with Poison and the Trash album. By the time of 1980, he's pretty down there. On the tour supporting Flush the Fashion, he's playing clubs and small venues in America. He doesn't even get out of America and Canada to play anywhere else at all. You know, we got nothing in Britain or Europe whatsoever.
And what sort of effect does that have on him in terms of his music, and also obviously his lifestyle, shall we say, is starting to take its toll at this point?
Well, he has admitted himself in his own documentary that he was heavily using cocaine as well as alcohol, rearing its head again. So we can talk about that. And certainly a lot of the musicians that I interviewed talked about that as well. So Alice, I met him for the first time in 1982 on the British tour that came then. And he was shorter than I expected. We all say that, don't we? But he was extremely skinny and thin. And you can see that in all of the videos from 80 to 82, how very thin he is. His voice has changed a bit. He always tends to speak some of the songs, or he goes very, very fast when he sings some of the songs as well. So he was in a perilously bad state. And around the time he did the final of the four new wavy kind of albums, if you like, Dada, I think we could have lost him potentially then. He could easily have died. I think that's probably fair to say. So bad a state he was in at that time. Dada from 80 is probably one of the best Alice Cooper albums. If anyone out there listening is vaguely interested in Alice Cooper and hasn't heard Dada, that would be the one I would say go to of all these 80s albums.
But, I mean, that's an interesting one because he's in a really bad state. He's trying to court the new wave, and there's nothing worse than, you know, your uncle dancing at a wedding thinking he's still got it. I mean, so could you argue, was Alice able to basically get a bead on what was coming out, what was hitting the charts, or what at least what was getting audiences to him?
Well, very much so. On Flush the Fashion, there's a track called Clones, which I guess you may be aware of, and that's certainly kind of is in the kind of the Gary Newman kind of zone, if you like, at that time, Clones. You could put that on this afternoon on your station and no one's going to be offended by that, I don't think. I think the idea was that Alice is still this character, this observer, who takes in and sees things and then feeds it back through his music. So Alice, in a way, invented something that could work all the way up into his 80s and his 90s if he wants. And so you still see that idea of Alice portraying a character who's looking and commenting on society and the things he sees around him. He even covers one of his old songs on the Special Forces album, which is interesting. Generation Landslide from Billion Dollar Babies makes a reappearance in a kind of a new wavy fashion. I think the first four albums, Flush the Fashion, Special Forces, Super Catchy Skin and Dada, are really good. There's a lot to enjoy. I'm not going to say that there's stuff there that's up there, say Halo of Flies, School's Out, Under My Wheels, all of that. For me, that's holy writ. That's the top of the mountain for me. But these are enjoyable. And in some respects, it's great to enjoy, not feeling they have to compete with past glories. But obviously there was a lot of people out there, casual listeners, that is probably what they wanted more of, you know, the stuff that they bought in big numbers, and that you certainly don't get that on these four, really.
And of course after Dada the wheels come off. I mean, he's in a terrible shape, and he puts himself, is he checked in, or does somebody take him into hospital?
Yeah, I think a bit of both, really, it's fair to say. He takes time out. And what is fascinating is the gap between Dada and Constrictor is 3 years. Now, do you remember when 3 years meant something? Now it's like you look at what's happened in your life and you think, God, that was 2 years, 3 years ago. Well, 3 years was a big deal back then, pre-internet. You know, it was a long time waiting, where you looked at the music press each week, listens to the radio. What is Alice doing? You know, you got nothing, except it appeared in a film in Spain called Monster Dog, which sort of vanished without trace.
probably good news. Yeah, but it was a long time away, but it wasn't like he was sort of face down, or because, I mean, a lot of people sort of went away and never came back. But the thing with Alice Cooper, I mean, again, we said this in the first first interview you did, the difference between the stage persona and the man is immense. And having been addicted and you know, in all sorts of trouble, he took his time back to see if he needed the substances he could still live as Alice, didn't he?
Well, that's correct. What he does, of course, he loses his label of a long time, Warner Brothers. And then if we're going to flit on to his comeback, if we can call it that, in 86 with the Constrictor album, MCA. And it's a full-on metal album. which was a hard listen for me because it's kind of more blinkered, if you like, and a little bit more diminished in its variety. That's my problem with it. I know a lot of people who tell me I'm talking rubbish and probably will have to read in the book because they love it, and that's fine. But there's no doubt what you said is true. Alice went on stage at the beginning of that tour thinking he got it right at last. Alice is what I do on stage, and I'm Vince Vernier off stage. But that was the first time he'd actually done that, where Alice wasn't impinging the character on his own life. So he had to go on and see, is Alice going to appear? You know, is Alice actually going to be on stage?
Yeah.
So he claimed, and he was.
It's an interesting one. And perhaps one of the reasons that he goes for, as you said, a sort of metal album is because at that, or, you know, a heavy rock album. Yeah. It's because at the time, let's think about it. This is 1987. It's Whitesnake and Def Leppard and, you know, it's AOR, and they're shifting millions of units and paying stadiums. And that this is the sort of thing that an audience will come to see. So perhaps he's, if you like, playing a banker by not trying to experimentally, he's back on his feet.
The banker as such is the fact that he's got this enormous back catalogue of the 70s stuff, the Welcome to My Nightmare, Schools Out, Billion Dollar Babies, Killer albums. So you've got a set list live on stage that has cherry-picked ones from that era, along with some of the new metal stuff from the Constrictor album. So whereas Constrictor wasn't perhaps, it didn't deliver a big comeback, the tour certainly did. The Nightmare Returns tour. You know, if you were a kid or someone and you were eking out your money, who do I go and see? You think, well, I'll go and see that guy who's got the guillotine and this fabulous stage that they all tell me about, and some of those songs that I like. So, I mean, he cleaned up on that tour, the Constrictor tour, no doubt at all.
And what was the reaction of A, the crowds, and B, other musicians, to have him back and, you know, and back in better, as it were?
I think there's two things. The crowds loved it. I loved it. I didn't much care for the new metal guitar solos on the old material, but that's okay. But also, interestingly, of course, he's now working with a new generation. Up till this point, the people he's worked with have been his own generation, people who came up around the same time. These, to some extent, are, you know, say kids. They're younger. They're like, I'm going to work with Alice Cooper. That's great. So they all look up to him. All the ones I've interviewed, they look up to Alice. They wouldn't see themselves as being equal in any way to Alice, whereas previous musicians would have said, well, you know, he's part of my generation, you know, he's one of our guys. These guys all looked up to him, and he's a very keen on picking the right people. He's always been keen on getting the right guitar players, and he got a phenomenal drummer in Ken Mary, outstanding drummer. So he does two albums. Alice has often had this thing of doing two albums on the bounce back to back that are similar. So Constrictor and Raise Your Fist and Yell, the second album, is certainly very, very close, as Damage has been similar sort of material. Although Raise Your Fist is the better album, I would say. It's got more going for it melodically and song-wise.
And it gets picked up, though. I remember the time it gets picked up by that whole sort of AOR, the Adult Orientated Rock Brigade, and the radio stations, and the MTV. And he's clever enough to recognise this. You know, he's so, you know, he's straight now, and he goes, okay, this is what I'm going to do, and this is going to obviously get the stadium going, make the money through the tours, and this is the way that Alice Cooper can continue. I mean, what was he saying at the time about it all?
I think, well, publicly he was saying that, you know, he's pleased with the tours, he was pleased with the albums, but privately, and there's considerable evidence in the book for this, he's thinking what he wants is that the acclaim, the success, the big sales that he'd had. He wants the big album sales. And as you've quite correctly said, he's looking around in sort of 1988, 89, who's actually doing well in the charts? What are the big selling records? And he spotted that an awful lot of them were being produced and co-written by Desmond Child, who you know from Aerosmith and Joan Jett and but, you know, Bon Jovi, those sort of records, Living on a Prayer, that kind of stuff. And he kind of figured correctly, if I can put Alice into that sound, you know, really, how could it fail? And he was spot on the money on that one. Absolutely was.
And interesting, because of obviously Aerosmith, talk about a comeback as well. I mean, all members of Aerosmith went right to the wire in the 70s and, you know, the late 70s, and then came back in the 80s in a much more sort of, again, cultured, produced sound, you know, AOR. So he was absolutely right. And bands like Bon Jovi, again, would look up to Alice as a, you know, as a godlike figure.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I saw the Trash tour, and the album for me is a bit too, like, I like Cheesecake, but I don't want it all the time. And it felt a bit too much like that. I thought that the Alice persona to me was a bit too diluted on Trash. But when you got to the venues for the tour, there were these kids there and families, and you thought this whole new huge, and he was playing big arenas in Britain. This whole new audience had come in because of Poison, because of Trash. So you can't argue with the guy. He got it dead right. He'd found somewhere else to go with the sound. And I think he's never really gone down from that. If anything, he's now reached a position where he's constantly playing arenas and tours and doing variants on the greatest hits and the best of songs. And I think he will continue to do so for another 5-10 years, I thought.
Do you think he expected Poison to be such a huge hit? Because it really is one of the tracks of the 80s, isn't it?
Yes, he absolutely knew it. All the musicians that I've interviewed, including the guy who wrote the riff, John McCurdy, because Poison's actually, the riff is an old song. It's from a John Waite song, the title of which escapes me momentarily, but it's in the book. And they just recycled the riff. But they knew it as soon as they heard it. Desmond Child put his gloss on it, you know, that cannot fail. If all these other songs are successful, this surely must be. And it's probably Alice's best vocal. That's me saying that. But he really does sing his heart out on that. I know he's sung stuff before that I've considered to be great in the past, but in terms of what he does and the performance that he gets through in that song, it's just first class. And it should have been a number one single, of course, in Britain, but he was held off by Jive Bunny.
Yeah, I mean, of all the things, isn't it, that you're going to get, you're going to keep you off the top spot. And, you know, and where are Jive Bunny now, we ask ourselves?
Well, actually, I've got an answer for that. If you actually wanted to know the
answer,
come on,
Chris. What are they working on a comeback album or something? Or what? Actually, what did Jive Bunny up to?
Well, it's a bit of a plug. But a friend of mine runs the Laurel and Hardy Museum, which is in Alverston in Cumbria, which is a fabulous place to go to. And the head guy in Jive Bunny came into his museum not long ago and told him he could lay his hands on costumes from Laurel and Hardy films. He now lives in Los Angeles, this guy. I forget his name, made a huge amount of money off the Jive Bunny records. And he came true. He actually did manage to lay his hands on costumes in outlets in Los Angeles that were used in original Laurel and Hardy films, including those worn by Laurel and Hardy.
Good grief. We go everywhere with our interviews, don't we? I didn't expect we'd get Jive Bunny and the Laurel and Hardy connection. And again, so as I said before, you were interviewed. Who were the people that you interviewed for this particular one? And did you look back at interviews around that time as well?
To be honest, I wouldn't have the time to list them all, because what had happened was in the 70s, Alice had worked with the band, Cooper Group, and then he'd worked with a fairly tightish bunch of musicians for the end. But the 80s, there were so many. I went down every album credit, every engineer, every musician, and I contacted every single one of them that I could find, all of them. And I think about 40 I got in the end.
And what, I mean, what
which was, yeah, hard work.
And I say, I mean, what was the, obviously happy to talk to you, happy to have Alice back. I mean, what was the work, was because he was a hard, I mean, we talked before, he was a hard taskmaster when he had the band in the barn, wasn't he, in the early days. Was he still, when he got back into his stride, was he still the Alice of old?
Not a single one of them had a bad word to say about Alice, other than some of them had some, what would be the word, regrets about how things were in the early 80s with the cocaine and so on, some of the difficulties they'd seen and experienced. The thing that I was most proud of in this book was I thought of a whole bunch of people who'd never been asked about their work with Alice Cooper, ever. And I got hold of them, which was the dancers and the performers who we started to use on stage, who had basically stood there, seen it, done it, been on the tour, but no one had ever bothered to ask them about what they'd seen, experienced. And I got some shocks on that, I've got to be honest. There was some information that you sit there, you know, you're a journalist and so on and everything, and you think this is gold dust, this is amazing that someone's going to sit there and tell me this sort of stuff. And some of it was a bit difficult to use. There's a couple of cases in the book where we have to kind of fudge who it is they're talking about, just to be careful.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was interesting. It was real stuff. It really was. And Franz Harari, the illusionist, he was terrific to talk to. He actually told me how he worked all of the illusions that Alice used on the tours in the mid-80s. Amazing guy, really was.
Because that's one of the things, isn't it? Because again, we've got 80s rock star, 80s tour at the end. You've got a full-on theatrical experience, dancers, illusions, which is Alice Cooper, but also you've got sort of, yeah, you've got some sort of knuckle-dragging hangers-on from other bands who might be coming backstage and not perhaps behaving themselves in the best possible way.
That's very, very kindly put of you. One of the dancers was telling me about some of the hijinks performance that was going on the tour, and I found myself saying, "What, in Birmingham as well?" And she said, "Yes, Chris, even in Birmingham on a Wednesday night or whenever it was, these sort of things would happen, you know, even in your town." And I thought, I can't imagine that this sort of rock and roll stuff happened in my town, you know?
Well, there you go. What do you hope that people take from the book? Because obviously from this, it gives them the springboard. And then, of course, in the 90s, we have the Wayne's World appearance, which is just legendary and absolutely cements his role. So what do you hope that people take from this particular book?
Well, first of all, I've already been asked if I'm doing the 90s, and that's kind of not up to me. So if anybody wants to put any pressure on or question Sonic Bond about that, then please go ahead. I think the problem with books like this is you find yourself writing for two audiences, Charles, and one is the hardcore fans, and they want detail. They want something they don't know.
Sure. Yeah.
And then you also have to write for casual people who might think, you know, this will fill me in on that era. And in fact, most of the other books don't. They tend to ignore the early part of the years, or they pass it by a bit quickly to get to Trash and Poison. And maybe the Metal years have covered a bit as well. So I'm basically trying to cover two bases. And I think it's better than the 70s one, which I was happy with. But I think this does a better job of covering those bases of whether you're a hardcore fan or just casually interested. There's something for everyone in there. So... Go and buy it, please.
And it's going to be available as a download from our own virtual bookstore. Just quickly, because you said you've been working on another one, which piqued my interest. At first thought, I thought that's 1,000 miles away from Alice Cooper. But then I've been thinking theatrical, American, and certainly distinctive. Tell us a little bit about that one, because we'll get you back on and we'll talk about that as well.
Yeah, I've actually got 1, 2, 3, 4 on the go. One's just finished, which is Sparks. In the 70s, AC/DC is going to be finished by the end of July. And then the big one, the Whopper, is going to be the Chic Organization, where I'm. And that is set up to be probably my favourite of them all, because it's so diverse in terms of all of the people and music that's involved with that. The Sparks one, I think it will do very well. I've had a lot of interest from Sparks fans already. The 1970s is a bit of a golden era in Europe, particularly the Sparks. Very diverse sets of songs, phenomenal lyrical songwriting from Ron Mayall. And they were just, it was one of those things, without sort of trying to guess your age, if you watched Top of the Pops in 1974, everybody who saw that Sparks performance at this town ain't big enough for both of us remembers it, because it just stopped you in your tracks. Just one of the all-time great performances ever.
Isn't that supposed to be the apocryphal one where John Lennon is saying, getting on the phone and saying, quick, check out, because Mark Bolan's playing with Hitler?
I don't know if that's true or not, but it's a great quote. But it certainly stopped all of us, because your listeners may be of an age, some might be younger, but Top of the Pops, you couldn't fast forward. You had to sit through everything. And some of it would be deadly awful for you, and your mum and dad might like it, and then some would be okay. And each week there'd be some nuggets that you clung on to. And every so often something would come on, like Alice Cooper Schools Out or Roxy Music Virginia playing in that era. And then Sparks, this town ain't big enough. Who is this guy in falsetto with the big hair? What's that about? And who is that man who's scaring me to death playing the organ with the slick back hair who looks like Hitler or Chaplin and doesn't move apart from just scowling at the camera? I mean, that's all we talked about, Dick Stay, in school. I remember it well.
Yeah, exactly. But this book is all about Alice Cooper in the 80s. If people want to find you online, where can they track you down, Chris?
Well, I'm on the Instagram. I'm down with the kids. And that's the easiest one, as a lot of Sparks fans have already found out. It's Chris Sutton, 1961. And I'm on there, as you know.
As always, Chris, great to have you with us. Have a great day, Chris Sutton. Thank you so much for your time today.
Oh, thank you, and speak soon. And yeah, he's looking great in Malaga. I wish I was there.
See you soon, my man.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.